His name is Victor, and right away saying his name is one thread of this new book on coping with the death of a child. When we speak their name, we keep them alive in memory and we celebrate their life. Nisha Zenoff is a licensed counselor, now retired, who spent more than 3 decades helping people process grief. Her new book is The Unspeakable Loss: How Do You Live After a Child Dies? Nisha, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
This book, I understand, has been a long time in the making. Take us, if you will, to the origin for this book.
Okay. In 1980, my oldest son, Victor, died in a hiking accident in Yosemite. He was hiking, not climbing, and it was a week before his 18th birthday. He had just graduated high school. He was the oldest of my 3 children, and his death devastated my family. It shattered my family, and it broke my heart completely. And I made a vow at that time that if I could survive, which seemed unlikely at the time, that I would find out as much as possible how parents survive the death of a child. How do you live with a broken heart? At the time, it seemed as much a mystery as it was a miracle, and I wanted to go to the experts. And who were the experts? Other bereaved families. So I reached out to as many bereaved parents as I could and asked them the question, how do you live after a child dies? It's a question that even people without children want to know the answer to. And I researched for many years and then started to write the book. And after about 10 years, I became sort of frustrated because I didn't have an end to the book and I didn't have a title. I thought, the end of the book can't possibly be written until I live it. And truly, the title that I came up with, the only thing I could come up with at the time was The Death of a Child Sucks. So I actually put the book in storage for 15 years. And 3 years ago, I had a powerful dream that said, take the book out of storage now, get it published. If not now, when?
And so you did interviews with dozens of parents, of family members who have coped with the death of a child. How did that impact you and your process of coping and also inform this book?
I did. I first started interviewing mothers who had experienced a sudden and unexpected death of a child as long ago as 35 years and as recent after I talked to one mother who had had a child die a week earlier. And truly, each interview was so powerful, it actually kept breaking my heart. I was just amazed at the resilience of these parents. And then many years later, 3 years ago, I interviewed another group of parents who can involve fathers, grandparents, and siblings, and other family members. And it was I found it to be incredibly healing to me because I realized that none of us is alone, even though grief can be such a lonely journey. We don't have to go through it alone because there are so many others. Unfortunately, there are so many others who have experienced the death of a child or a grandchild or a sibling, and they can lead us into this path that's a life journey.
You have so many questions in the book that it's just question marks everywhere. And it seemed to me that you obviously try to answer these questions in the best way possible, but what is it about so many questions that are asked at that point with the death of a child?
Because when I have worked with bereaved families, they ask many questions because they want to know, first of all, can I survive? And the second question that usually comes up is, how can I live for the rest of my life with this much pain? And another question is, what do I do when I want to die to be with my child? And the third question is, Nisha, are you happy? Were you ever able to experience joy again? So I decided to write the book in a question and answer format with my personal story woven throughout the book. But the book is made so that anyone can read the book. You do not have to read it cover to cover, because many grieving people really don't want to read. Their brain isn't working. They have brain fog, and they just want to have some answers. And of course, there's no right answer. There's no perfect answer. Just like there's no one way to grieve, there's no one answer to questions. But I wanted to give the author the most essential questions that grieving people ask.
Nisha Zanoff is with us. She is a licensed counselor, now retired, who spent more than three decades helping people process grief. Her book is The Unspeakable Loss: How Do You Live After a Child Dies? You can join this conversation, 800-642-1234. How did you help someone who lost a child? What did you find most comforting? Have you suffered this type of loss? Did you question whether you were allowed to enjoy life without your child? 800-642-1234. You can post as well on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Nisha, how is the death of a child different than what we experience when another family or friend dies?
The death of a child is unique in that it goes outside of the natural order of things. We expect to outlive our parents. We expect to outlive our grandparents. But the death of a child is so unusual. Well, it's actually not unusual. Unfortunately, children die all the time. But the order of things, it upsets nature. And you outlive your child. And how do you live with such, how long is forever? How long is forever when a child dies?
What do you mean by that? How long is forever?
It's, again, we don't want to compare grief. Because everyone who suffers grief has lost a loved one. And all grief is painful. So I don't want to compare grief. But when I was trying to think of a title for the book, another author suggested I title the book The Great Grief. And you can remarry again, hopefully. You can get another job, you can build another house, but when your child dies, even if you have other children, you can never replace the beloved child that has died. And the child holds your future.
Nisha, The word unspeakable is pretty interesting, because you bring a story into your book about the aunt who had a portrait of a dead son above the fireplace. And this aunt would go away sometimes for hours, and people didn't know where she went. What about the aspect of this unspeakable part?
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. This is a memory of mine, actually. When I was 10 years old, I remember going to my Aunt Lena's house, and there was a huge portrait over her fireplace. And I asked my mother, whose portrait was that of that handsome young man? And my mother said, shh, don't ask, I'll tell you later. And as we left my Aunt Lena's house, my mother said, that was Aunt Lena's son, Walter. He died in 1943, going back to his army base, and Aunt Lena never speaks his name. And when Annalena's grandson was born and her daughter named him after the uncle who died, Aunt Lena couldn't even call her grandson by his name, Walter. She gave him a nickname, Billy. Mm. And that, for generation, caused a silent grief that was never resolved, never spoken in the family. The other aspect of the unspeakable loss is that it is so painful. The grief of a child is unimaginable. The death of a child is unimaginable. And I found that so many bereaved people do not want to speak the name of their child to other people because they don't want to bring other people's pain. So we're silent about it. Like, for instance, if I was at a dinner party years ago, and this has changed for me because now I believe it's so important to speak about our children who have died and to bring their memories into our life now. But I remember being at a dinner party and people would say, how many children do you have? And sometimes I would say two instead of three because I didn't want to say yes, and one of my children died because I didn't want to ruin the dinner party for everyone else. And the unspeakable part is also many people who are friends and family don't want to bring up the name of the child who's died because they don't want to bring up the pain to the parents. So they don't mention the deceased child. But I can promise you that every parent who has had a child die does not forget that child. And you're not bringing up their pain because the pain is always there. So the unspeakableness of it has to do with not wanting to bring up any pain. And I'm such a believer that in order to get on with our lives, it's so important to continue mentioning our loved ones, our memories, bringing our loved ones into our conversation, and we keep their memory alive in that way.
There was this one quote in your book from a parent who said, when that child dies and their name and their life isn't mentioned again, that it's like the death happens again, and I'm paraphrasing there. Is there something to that?
Yes, it's like the silence is like the second death. Mm. If we don't speak about our children, we keep them unknown. And I was speaking, this is an amazing experience that I had just the other day, my five-year-old granddaughter, Ruby. I was asking her if she knew who her aunts and uncles were, and she said, and yes, Uncle Victor, the one who died. Because we also have a Victor in the family who's very alive and who's in college and who's fabulous. And she was able to differentiate between her Uncle Victor, the one who died, is just part of a natural conversation.
Her book is written in a question and answer format. The Unspeakable Loss explores the questions that emerge in the loss of a child. From part one, the doorbell rings, to part four, as the years go by, what can I expect? Nisha Zanoff stays with us. She's a licensed counselor who spent more than three decades helping people process grief. You can join in 800-642-1234. How did you help someone who lost a child? What did you find comforting? Did you find it was something big, or did the small, quiet gestures matter more? 800-642-1234. We'll return in just a moment. The book grew from the collective wisdom of dozens of parents and family members she interviewed, and there was the personal experience for the book as well, the unspeakable loss, as Nisha Zanoff learned to live anew after the death of her son Victor in a hiking accident at the age of 17. The book presents about 100 questions that come up through the grief from the moment a child dies to years later. And your questions are welcome as well at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Danny in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Danny.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Am I on?
Yeah, go ahead, Danny.
In 1987, I experienced the going home of my firstborn son, Aaron, on a three-wheeler I was driving. And later that evening, about 5 hours after the trauma took place, I took off the life support because he was brain dead. About 3 years later, almost to the date, I was laying in bed one morning when I had heard a voice ask me, "What are you going to do with yourself, and what are you going to do with your life from this experience you've been put through?" And I laid there, and the only difference between turning bitter or better is an I or an E, and what am I going to choose? So it becomes a conscious choice whether you choose to be a bitter person from your experience or a better person.
Danny, thank you so much. Nisha.
Danny, first of all, I just want to tell you that I'm so deeply sorry for the death of your beloved Aaron. And what a beautiful, beautiful story you're telling that can help people so much to move forward without moving away from their beloved child. What you can choose to be better rather than bitter. It is a conscious choice, Danny. We can't choose about our child's death. We really can't do anything about our child's death.
Correct.
But we can choose how we handle it. And your choice to become better is just a beautiful example for so many people who have broken hearts. Thank you so much for calling in.
Let's go to Kathleen now in Delavan. Hi, Kathleen. Delavan.
Yeah, hi, good morning. I just wondered if you had ever come across a situation where, well, I'm sure you have, where the family was estranged and the parents, daughter, were estranged, badly estranged due to mental health issues and really bad life choices. I just wondered if you'd ever encountered that, because it's I think such a completely different situation when you're living with the grief of not having this kid in your life and you see the path her life has taken, and then all of a sudden it's over, and we were forbidden to attend a service, and her husband was just a terrible person. And that's really difficult to live with, because you never, ever can, the hope of ever restoring a relationship is gone.
Nisha.
Yes, Kathleen, my heart goes out to you. And yes, it is not unusual to have a family who is estranged during the death of a daughter. And what you're living with is not just one grief and one death, but many griefs over the family being estranged. It's like the death of the family itself. So you're grieving multiple griefs. And what's important to know is that you have to find your own way through, because the family may never again be the loving family or have the privilege of sharing love and discussion about your daughter who died. But you can do that on your own without waiting for the family to be different. It's up to you to choose and to look for your relationship with your beloved one who died.
Kathleen, thanks so much. Let's go to Lloyd now in Milwaukee. Go ahead, Lloyd.
Hello. Yes. My ex-wife and I lost our oldest daughter. It's Solana. It's been almost 7 years now. And one of the hardest things, too, is that we still haven't even gotten a headstone for her. But it just, it took my oldest brother. He spent about a week at my house, or at our house, and just helping take care of stuff. And then it wasn't until my dad spent about a week, too, and he couldn't stand to see me like that anymore. And he just got me busy working with my hands and kind of pulled me up and had the talk of, and made me realize that I had to be strong because I didn't carry the baby. My wife did, my ex-wife did. And we had already had another daughter at that point, who was just over 1 year old. And, you know, it had not been for them to kind of pull me up on bootstraps and, you know, for me to take the helm and, you know, cut my morning time, as it were, I'd probably still be in that depressed slump because I really didn't want to do anything.
Nisha, what about the support system around people?
Yes.
What can they do?
Yes, exactly. That's what I was going to mention. And Lloyd, I am deeply, deeply sorry for the death of your beloved. Is it Alana?
Solana.
Solana. And, you know, there is no timeline for grief. There's no right time or right way to grieve, just as there's no right way to love. The fact that you haven't gotten a headstone yet is just that you haven't felt right to do it yet. And I would suggest that you check out a couple of bereaved family support groups. One is The Compassionate Friends, and they have local chapters throughout the country. There are 700 chapters, and there you will find a lot of support of people who have experienced the death of a child or children or all of their children, and they can help guide you at this time so that you know that you do not have to suffer alone. And another beautiful organization is called the Bereaved Parents USA. And again, there's another organization online called Open to Hope. And the most important thing for you, Lloyd, right now, I think, is to be compassionate with yourself, because there's not a right time to do anything with grief. There's no finish line for the ending of grief when your child dies.
Lloyd, thank you so much for the call. We're with Nisha Zanoff this hour. She's a licensed counselor who spent more than 3 decades helping people process grief. Her new book is called The Unspeakable Loss. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Nisha, there's this saying that time heals all wounds, but we know also that there is this journey involved in grief. Is there anything to this saying that to try to comfort someone that time heals, time will help?
Well, time actually is part of a healing process. For instance, if you think of beach glass, and you know how sharp the edges are initially, and then over time and over years with the ocean and the sand, the beach glass gets softened. It changes. And that's the same thing with grief. Over time, over years, it definitely becomes different. It changes. But time itself is not the only healer. It's what you do with the time. It's how you choose to spend the time. And so, therefore, again, it's so much choice involved in this. Do you want to go towards being contracted, pulling down the curtains, and staying isolated forever grieving? or do you want to open the curtains, let some daylight come in, look for what you feel grateful for, and in that way, time can help heal your broken heart as well.
Let's go to Dana now in Milwaukee. Go ahead, Dana.
Hi. Such an interesting program. Brings up, these emotions. But I have an interesting comment. My sister died, and I have a sister who was born after this sister died, so she never knew her. And when we all, grew up and got married, and she named her daughter after our dead sister, who, of course, she had never met. And I think she named her to sort of become more of the family because this thing happened and it sort of bonded the older kids. But I was really kind of just shocked. I couldn't say my dead sister's name. And but the interesting thing is that my niece is a wonderful person. And in retrospect, although I would never have named my daughters after that or have suggested it or recommended it, in fact, it's beautiful having a niece with that name. So it's just an observation.
And Dana, what is your niece's name?
Erin, E-R-I-N.
Erin, E-R-I-N. How beautiful. I'm so glad you called in because siblings, and it was your sister that died, often are the most forgotten and visible grievers. People often will ask a child or a sister or a brother, how are your parents doing? And forget that their sibling is grieving too, because siblings often want their parents to look whole and healthy again, and they don't like to see their parents grieving. And how beautiful that you say your sister's your niece, right? It's Erin is your niece,
right? Well, my sister is my niece.
Yeah, she's your niece. That's so beautiful. And I remember that when my brother and sister-in-law named their second child, a boy, Victor, it took me a while to be able to actually say Victor and to call him by his name. And now I, too, rejoice in his beauty as he's in college and just feel that he carries the name of my son. So thank you so much for calling in as a bereaved sibling. It's so important, your own journey of grief and healing.
Nisha, how did your kids cope with the death of their sibling?
My middle son, Andrew, and my youngest daughter, Faye, of course, they are now in their 50s, and they've had a lot of time to live with Victor's death as long as I've lived with Victor's death. And when Victor died, the three of them were very close because they were only 2 years and 2.5 years apart. They were absolutely devastated, absolutely in shock and grief. But as children, they were very busy with their activities and looking towards their parents to show that we were still going to have a stable family. Unfortunately, we did divorce several years later. And so when Victor died, it actually shattered. We had a family shattered by his death, and then just shortly after that, shattered by a divorce. Mm-hmm. However, now I'm just so proud of them. They are living a beautiful life, contributing to this world. They have their own incredible children, and they have so much wisdom about how you live with a sibling's death. They talk about Victor all the time. They have pictures, not all the time. I mean, they include him in their conversations. And in holidays, they include Victor in their conversations. And he's a guide to them in many ways. They definitely keep his memory alive through their love and in their families.
Dana, thank you for calling in. Let's go to Nicole in Madison. Hi, Nicole.
Hi. Our son Finnegan passed away almost 5 years ago from brain cancer when he was 2 years old. And since he has passed, we have found that the way that we deal with our grief is by doing a lot of things to honor Finn. So the one thing that we do in the spring every year is we have a kickball tournament, and it's called the Live Like Finn Kickball Tournament, and the money that we raise goes to the John McNicholas Pediatric Brain Tumor Foundation. And then in the fall at my daughter's school, we have a race called the Race to the Finn, and the money is raised for the Finnegan Ringjeski Scholarship Fund. And then his birthday is close to when the race is, and so every year on his birthday, we have a billboard made with his picture on it that says Race to the Finn, and it's for the race, but the whole family goes to the billboard, and we watch videos about Finn, and so it's really important to us to honor him and to do these things for him. We have two other children that we're raising, and we're doing things for them day in and day out. But these are the things that we can do for our son, Finn, now.
Nicole, I'm so glad you called in, because you are doing so many beautiful things to honor Finnegan's life. And I'm so sorry for his death from brain cancer. But you're a beautiful example of living your life to honor Finnegan and to honor your child with all the things that you're doing. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. How can I be there for my other children when I'm so preoccupied and in such pain? It's one of dozens of questions in the new book, The Unspeakable Loss, through interviews with parents who've lost a child. Author Nisha Zenoff collects the questions and offers some answers to the difficult questions at the stages in reconciling with and living with the loss of a child. She stays with us. Your questions, your insights are welcome. 800-642-1234. Has your family endured a child's death? What did it take for you to navigate everyday life in a time of immense grief? What about years later? At what point did you realize that grief is a journey? It's not something that you get over. We'll return in a moment. Tears ever stop? Who am I now without my child? How can I help my other children cope? Just a few of the many questions that are approached through parents who have lived through the loss of a child and are learning how to find hope and rebuild. Nisha Zenoff is a licensed counselor, now retired, who spent more than 3 decades helping people process grief. Her new book is The Unspeakable Loss: How Do You Live After a Child Dies? Your questions and observations on this extremely personal discussion, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Madeline now in Middleton. Hi, Madeline.
Yes. I just wanted to comment on one of the things that the author has said about the book, the importance of people talking about the children you have lost. I've lost 2 children within the last nine years, and they were both suddenly. They were adults. The one was just a few days away from her 49th birthday, and she died in 2008, and my son died almost 3 years to the day after her, again, of an emergency surgery, and he was going to be 47 in another month. So it was extremely hard. The boy that my youngest boy that died after my oldest daughter. He was very close to her, as they all were close to each other. They were only a couple years difference. I had four children. And it was very painful for all of us to lose her. And when we lost Christopher, the youngest, it was just more than painful. He was the uncle that everybody looked up to. He was like a child himself. He loved Christmas. He brought everybody unique gifts and funny gifts. And I tell you, the first Christmases without them are very, very difficult. But
Madeline, your daughter's name?
Julie. And she was a speech therapist at a hospital in Milwaukee, and Christopher was an architect here in Madison. And we did a lot of things with Christopher when he passed away. I actually had a birthday party for him in the park about a year and a half or 2 years after he passed away. And we invited friends and some family and celebrated his birthday. I was just trying to keep him alive with everybody, and that was the main thing of my focus, is to keep them alive. But it's hard, because the longer the years go, you know, they don't mention them as much as I would love them to be mentioned. I bring them up a lot. And I have to tell people who are grieving, there's one song that makes me cry, but it also is very inspiring to me. And the song I was playing when my son passed away, we turned the radio on, and the song was Smile. And in that song, every word is true. You know, smile when your heart is breaking, and everything about it tells you to smile. And people have said to me, I don't know how you can smile when you've lost, you know, I don't know how you go on. Well, you don't have a choice. You just have to put one foot in front of the other and keep going. And you have to go like that for the rest of the family, too.
Nisha?
Well, Madeline, you're my hero. Thank you so much for sharing how you're honoring the lives of your beloved children, Julie and Christopher. My heart goes out to you for their death. There's only one thing more painful than the death of a child, and that's the death of two children or three children or all your children. And you are a beautiful living example of choosing life, choosing love. Living your life to honor their lives is such an important thing to share with listeners now, because so many people will be in exactly your same place, and you're living your life and saying that people don't mention their names as much as you would like them to. Well, that's so important that you mention their names. And we have to educate other people that it's okay for them to mention the names of our beloved children, that we love keeping their lives, their memories alive.
Madeline brings up one of the questions in your book. How is a person expected to handle the weight of the holidays after a child dies?
Yes. So the holidays, the most common phrase that I hear from people who are grieving around the holidays is, I'm dreading the holidays. And there are many reasons for dreading the holidays when you've lost a loved one. Some people say they're afraid to be with family or friends again because they're afraid that their grief will come out and embarrass other people, or they'll feel uncomfortable crying in the midst of a turkey dinner. And some people say that the holidays are so painful because they know that that beloved one will never be at that table again or celebrate. And it seems like everyone else is so cheerful. The myth is that everyone else is so cheerful and happy. and that we grievers are still with our broken hearts, and we don't want to ruin other people's holidays. So I strongly suggest that the most important thing around the holidays is that you take care of yourself, that you decide with your family or you decide for yourself how you want to spend the holidays. This could be a time to reach out to a grief counselor. It could be a time to reach out to one of the support groups that I mentioned, to be surrounded by others who understand what you're going through. But it's a time also for you to make new memories. Like, you might find that this year, if or recent years, you might want to go to the ocean or the mountains, which are big enough to hold your grief, and you might want to do something very different for yourself. One of the questions that comes up during the holidays for people who are grieving and lost a loved one is, how do you want to honor your beloved one's memory during the holiday? At the holiday dinner or gathering with friends and family, would you like to bring in your beloved one? Will you feel comfortable and open requesting that you have a candle in honor of your beloved one who's no longer at the table with you? Be compassionate with your yourself. Be compassionate with your friends, but still let them know that you might decide at the last minute not to attend if it's not good for you. I really want to stress that the most important thing for you during the holidays is to decide what will feel right for you and follow that. Give yourself full permission to choose what's right for you.
Madeline, thank you so much. Let's go to Samuel in Madison. Hi, Samuel.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Hello, thanks. Okay, thank you. My sister lost her son, and it was devastating to us all. But my question is, how can I help her? Any comfort or sorrow that I can express to her just seems empty to me. How can I help her with, and her husband and her daughter?
Wow, what a beautiful question. How long ago did her son die, Samuel?
Let's see, 2 years ago.
And what was his name?
Benny.
Benny.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my heart goes out to you for the loss of your nephew. And have you asked your sister what you can do to support her?
I've asked once, but I think she was just too distraught to really think of anything.
Yeah.
I haven't asked again.
So sometimes what's helpful, and again, it all depends on your relationship with your sister and your family relationship and whether if you live in the same town. Do you live in the same area?
No, we're actually pretty far apart.
You live far apart. There are things that you can suggest, like specific things, like actually, in this world today, you can even ask if she wants you to post things on social media about the loss of Benny, or how you can help do specific things for her. It's often helpful to, instead of just saying, what can I do to help? Because often people who are grieving don't know. It's good to make a suggestion, like, help them write thank you notes or bring food over or order food if you're out of town, order food and have it delivered to their door. Or if you're in the same area, you know, help if there are other children, give the children rides, walk the dogs, anything that can be specific. But I think what you're doing, Samuel, is showing how much you love her and care. And that's probably the most important thing you can do, is to continue to tell her how much you care and love Benny and her.
Well, Samuel, thank you so much for calling in. Let's go to Doris in Rice Lake.
Hello.
Go ahead, Doris.
My son, Andrew, died last month. He was 29, and he was working with hurricane victims down in Texas with Hurricane Harvey, and he had cardiac arrest, and they weren't able to bring him back. And it sounds really, really noble, and on the outside, it looks like there's this amazing young man who put others ahead of himself, and yet, even though I'm grateful for his last week of life being able to serve, he was severely mentally ill, and he had over 32 inpatient psych hospitalizations. And the challenge for me right now is I feel like I was so isolated being his mom, the way his behavior was, his unpredictable behavior, and his just tormented thoughts, and just he's in denial, didn't take meds, and it was his life was already really tough, and yet even though I'm obviously grieving horrifically, I feel like I can't quite get there because the holidays were really difficult with him. He was unpredictable, and he was inappropriate. And so he also told me he wasn't going to live till his 30th birthday, and he would have turned 30.
Doris,
December 15th. So
Doris, we're getting short on time, and I want Nisha to be able to respond. Go ahead, Nisha.
Okay, Doris. And my heart goes out to you for Andrew's death. And I know with his mental illness, you already knew what a lot of grief would be because you've probably been grieving his mental health for years. And this is a time for you not to be isolated. Please reach out to a support group like the Compassionate Friends or Bereaved Parents USA in your area. They have chapters there, and it's so important for you to get support from other people who have lived and gone through similar things, never the same exactly, but you'll find other people there who have some wisdom that can help support you so that you're not isolated at this time. It's very important that you do not have to suffer alone and that you can be held by other people who have walked a similar path.
Doris, thank you so much for making that call. And Nisha, it's been a pleasure having you this hour. Thank you so much for your insights.
Kate, I want to thank you for your sensitivity and compassion with the questions you're asking. The death of a child is such a painful and difficult topic for most people. Even interviewers have a hard time with the subject, and I want to thank you so much for speaking and speaking out and inviting your guests to call in. Thank you for having me on the show.
Nisha Zenoff is author of the book The Unspeakable Loss: How Do You Live After a Child Dies? This hour, The Morning Show was produced by Keely Baltina and Naija Ellison. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.